No, you can't. You can't have a government like this without an income tax, but we don't want a government like this. This is not the kind of government that was designed by our founders of the country. It's not what was written in the Constitution. We've only had an income tax since 1913. But if you want a welfare state, and if you want to police the world and pay for the defense of Japan and Germany, send foreign aid to the Soviet Union, you not only need the income tax, you need the Federal Reserve to print up the money when the deficit is accumulated. So we think the government should be much smaller. If government is small, then you don't need an income tax.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast.
Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PrepperRecon for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
While you're at PrepperRecon.com, stop by the Prepper Recon Supply Store. We've got a great selection of Molly compression packs, hydration kits, and our new concealed carry tactical slings. All the packs and slings come with your choice of patch to let liberals know how you feel. We have some very cool Moulin Lay patches, Come and Take It patches, Sheepdog, Zombie Response Team, and matching U.S. flag patches. Of course, we still have our fully stocked Molly-compatible individual first aid kits as well. Just click the store tab at the top of the PrepperRecon.com homepage. Today's guest is James Walton of the I Am Liberty podcast. James, welcome back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, Mark. I really appreciate it. Glad to be with you tonight.
Oh, absolutely. I guess the biggest news is your new book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the book came out on the 16th. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. It was material I took off the blog. It was a web series called Our World. And I took these, what it is essentially journal entries from four different individuals living through something that they never really, they don't really describe in the early journals. So the actual cause of their situation and the setting, and, you know, they're across the nation, the characters are spread across the nation, and they have different challenges, but they, early on in the story, they never really tell you what exactly happened to the country slash world. But what you do know is that they're struggling. You know what I mean? Water's hard to get, food's hard to get. And the worst of humanity is rearing its head for most. One of the characters is actually, his name's Gilbert Hernandez, and he's actually a criminal. I mean, he's one of the guys who decided, I did nothing to prepare for this, so I gotta go mug people, and I gotta rob people, and I gotta live, and that's what I gotta do, so. It's a really cool look at it, but the book was packaged sort of in a preface, and it's presented almost like a case study done by a man named Jay Singfire way in the future. And he's looking back at these journals, and he's trying to figure out, he's trying to piece together exactly what happened. You know, he's reading the journals, and he's getting clues, and he's trying to figure out, okay, how did this happen, and how do we avoid this again? The time period that this all went down is 2019 to 2041. And in the future, they've dubbed that the Dark Decade. So that's what his case study is all about. Finding out the origin of the Dark Decades and going through these journals. And like I said, trying to piece together what exactly happened. And, it was a fun thing to write. You know, it really was fun. But then to put the case study spin on it, it was really cool. So the book really is presented not so much like a novel, you know, with chapter and, chapter after chapter, but it really is presented as though the man doing the case study, Jay Singfire, is handing you this book and saying, look, I've done my analysis and this is what I've come up with. Now you're my colleague. I want you to read this book and come up with your analysis and put our heads together and find out what happened through this time period that's shrouded, known as the Dark Decades. And that's really what Our World Recovered Journals is all about.
That's really cool. It's a neat take on the way that you're sort of describing how everything's happening in the journal format. Now, the journals chronicle the dark decades of post-collapse America. Now, when Rome fell, we had what's affectionately referred to as the Dark Ages. Do you think that's something that we could see here in America between the collapse and the rebuild?
You mean in reality?
Yes.
Not in my fiction mind.
Right.
So another dark period similar to the Dark Ages? I don't know. There's a lot of money to be made in this world, Mark, and it's what one of the things about a real complete and total collapse that kind of kind of throws me from really believing that it could get to that level is that better than anything, the people in this world have learned how to turn a profit and how to make money. And you really can't profit well off of a complete and total collapse. You know what I mean? Where not, there is no commerce and no one's working. And it really is every man for himself. What I envision, Mark, and this is even worse than a total collapse in my opinion, but I envision a world where, you know, you have these, they're all, I don't want to say romantic ideas, but they are a little bit romantic about, you know, if I had 8 hours a day that I didn't have to work, I could tend my garden, I could hunt my meat, or I could, you know, with all those things and those processes and those plans that we all have, you fantasize a little bit about in 8 hours, 10, 12, whatever your workday looks like, I could get these things done and that wouldn't be a big problem. I think I could survive. I've learned enough. All that. But the thing that terrifies me is I think we're still going to have to go to work, Mark. I think people are still going to have, or the bill collectors will still be calling. And we're still going to have to work an 8-hour day, and our wife's still going to have to work an 8-hour day. And I think the infrastructures will become, you know, the security and the infrastructures will become poorer and poorer as time goes on. And we'll still have to operate, but we'll also be, you know, forced to survive outside of work. That's what I think is going to happen. In my opinion.
Well, that's sort of been the trend line through recent history anyway.
Sure.
You know, back in the 60s when you had the Leave It to Beaver show and June was just basically there waiting for Ward to come home from work and give him a kiss with her pearls on and dinner on the table and all of that. You know, we had roughly the same work participation rate, labor participation rate that we have right now. I don't think it's because, we've achieved such a level of prosperity that women don't have to work anymore. I think it's just that people aren't able to find the good quality jobs and to exist at a better level than what they're probably able to exist at with just, government handouts. So I think a lot of people choose to just stay out of the workforce. And then I think there's not a lot of options for people to get in the workforce. But it's, you're right. People are having to work more and more. And, you know, we should be getting to a greater level of prosperity to where, people would have more leisure time. We're certainly making more money than they made in the 60s, but the money's been devalued systematically. Through quantitative easing measures, things like we've had over our past few years and the other things that's been done to us through the central bank. Would you agree?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, cost of living, is changing every day. I just wrote an article in Prepper and Shooter magazine about the food prices and how they were affected this past year. You know, and I see a lot more of the same happening. But even to get away from food prices and droughts and all these things that you don't hear all that much about but are affecting us in a big way, I don't know if you know this, but God, the water scenario out west is so incredibly bad. I mean, there are actually people doing studies on just how long it could take before Hoover Dam stops operating. You know, as far as these decades, or this nearly decade long drought that, California and the West has been in. But, yeah, for sure. The cost of living it's murder. And when you factor in childcare as well, you know, that's one of those things that, they didn't have to worry about on Nick at Night. You know what I mean?
It's sure.
Childcare. And in my estimation, it'll get increasingly, more difficult for the American family to exist on its own two feet. And I don't know if that is because of socialism or whatever kind of redistribution ideology that some people in our government have. It very well could be part of the plan. But at the end of the day, I just think they have such a debt to take that there's really no other way that, you know, a debt to pay rather, that there's no other way for them to spin. We need more taxes. We need more taxes. We need more taxes.
Yeah. And then on top of the taxes, devaluation of the currency, because every time they print another dollar, they devalue the dollar that's in your pocket that you had to work and pay taxes and all of the expenses associated with earning that dollar, gasoline and food and childcare and everything else, that was associated with earning that dollar. And now you've managed to save a dollar. And then when they print another one, they devalue that dollar that you had to work so hard and pay so many taxes and costs associated with earning it. And it's worth less, but they also devalue their own debt because their debt is the government's debt is valued in dollars. So, if they can decrease the value of those dollars, they decrease their debt. And they don't have any problem doing that either.
The good news for us, I guess it's, you know, not great news, but it's a bit of good news, is that the world is struggling again.
Yeah, it's propping up the dollar.
The world around us is struggling again. China's slowing down, and you know, Europe is, I don't know what Europe's doing. They're not doing anything good, that's for sure. Japan is having some trouble. So that's the one glimmer, you know, of hope, is the fact that they're not all doing great and looking at us saying, hey, man, come on, get your stuff together. So that's a plus, but yeah. Long term, I really don't think that we have an answer long term. I think they're praying that somehow we reach this point of enlightenment where currency and capitalism no longer exist and they can just say forget about our debt, because that's about the only way it's going to get paid off.
And the dollar being the cleanest dirty shirt, sort of, so to speak, is it's making silver more accessible right now. It's down to about it's getting close to $17 an ounce right now.
Yeah, it's I'm waiting, Mark. I started buying silver out of the common sense. You know what I mean? The common sense reasoning. When I started reading up on the economic situation, I said, you know what? I got to get into this thing. This makes sense. And what happened is I wound up really falling in love with the different prints and the different numismatics and stuff like that. But I'm really waiting for the right time. I've turned into one of those guys. You know, you hear about, if you listen to different folks, you know, tout silver, you always hear about that perfect time to get in. And I'm hesitant to get in right now. I just feel like it's going to drop a little more and I want to be around when it does.
But I'm dollar cost averaging all the way down. You know?
Well, here's the unique thing, Mark. And I am as much an advocate as anybody else when it comes to silver. I love it and I buy it and I think it's vital. You know, and it's one of the best things for a guy who is, you know, burdened with a monthly budget, because you don't have to get us at 25th ounce of gold in order to make, you know what I mean? In order to invest in metals. But I heard something from a guy who I listen to a lot, and that's, Brother John F. I don't know if you listen to him at all, but he does something called a silver update, and it's a good listen for those out there who are interested. But he did a big spiel about once silver goes under a certain level, people will no longer sell it to you at that point. You know what I mean? You will not be able to get silver at $8 an ounce again because there's just too much money lost in that. So I was thinking about that. I was mulling that over in my head. And what really set me off was thinking, okay, if that logic works on that end, then the logic has to work on the other end too. So as far as, you know, $100 an ounce silver. So if I have a bank vault full of $100 an ounce silver, is anybody going to buy it off me? I guess is the question. You know? And it's definitely not to deter anybody.
They were buying it at 50. And they
that
were paying.
Very true.
And for American Eagles, I think the premium was close to about $7.50 on those. So, I mean, they were paying 57, 58 bucks for an ounce.
That is the most recent news that I heard that had me at least a little stymied about the overarching goals of silver. Now, I think that there's no denying that silver is undervalued and being absolutely, you know, I don't really know what they're doing to it, but they're definitely managing the price in some way that is less than, you know, less than truthful, I guess.
And what's your trigger price?
I don't know. I don't think I can hold on after 16. If I see $16 silver, I think I gotta jump in. you know, 16 even. 15, I'm definitely going in.
Yeah, anything with a 15 handle, I've got a little powder that I'm keeping dry for any, if I see a 15 handle. So that'd
just
be $15.99, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. If they want to stag me, that's all they need. Listen up, Gainesville and Silvertown and JM Bullion.
Yeah. It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today. Now, so basically what you're describing for what you expect in reality, it's something that looks like just existence just above slavery, almost like a serfdom, which, you know, with property taxes, that's really all we are, is serfs, because we don't really own our land anymore if we have to rent it from the government by paying property taxes.
Well, here's the thing. I think if people make calculated decisions now, sure, there's going to be that. If the government exists the way it does today in the future, which is also sort of something that could change, in my opinion. You know, we are, what are we? What are we but really anymore but a dictatorship with, you know, we don't vote on anything other than, we should be voting on much more. We have intermittent bouts of democracy here. You know what I mean? I like the parliament model. And maybe the government changes from here till then, but it does seem to be pretty well oiled, and I don't think anybody's going to stop the gravy train from running. But I think if people make calculated decisions now and start figuring out how to, you know, the homestead is a great example, how to become a little more self-reliant and not rely on the woes of different markets to dictate how much money of yours you get to keep, because that's a big piece. You know, that's a big piece of it. And if one of the things, and I don't, you know, you can call it a conspiracy theory of mine, but one of the issues I see being a big one in the future is water and clean water. And I just can't even imagine an American family trying to get by if they had to pay some exorbitant price for water, you know, something that's really is so cheap now and such, you know, it's, we don't even think about it. But, you know, if things don't get reeled in and pollution doesn't get reeled in, I think the tracks are greased on that as well. You know, we hear one thing, but we see others. I spend a lot of time on boats and in water and fishing and hunting, and I see the land, and I don't know how much of that people are being honest about, but yeah, further you get away from these ideas of someone else has to feed me, someone else has to teach me, someone else has to I have to piggyback someone else to get through life. I think you'll really live better in the future that's coming, and maybe it won't be so gloomy.
Now, in the book, the Dark Decades are a true sort of a dystopian future. Is that right? Can you tell us a little bit about what it looks like in the book?
Oh, sure, most definitely. Yeah, so I'm a sci-fi nerd. You know what I mean? That's me. That's what I am. That's what I like. I always have been. And so developing these sort of worlds and these characters and these situations are great fun to me. And what I'm getting at is it's not necessarily the world that I envision, but it is definitely a place to write about that's very interesting. So, like I said, it's not very detailed about what has happened exactly to the country. But we know that the country itself is basically been leveled, and most if not all the infrastructure that we depended on is history. You know, there's no phone lines, there's no electricity, you even read pieces where these problems have extended into Europe and further, you know, further east, but there's different challenges in different parts of the country. So there's issues with people, really, more so than anything. The book is really about what happens to humanity. And, for example, one of the characters, Sharon Kimball, she lives in Phoenix, Arizona. And her biggest challenge every day is what you would imagine in Phoenix, Arizona. She has to find water. She has to find water every day and she has to hide water. And you never realize how precious it is until the whole population around you wants the same thing, you know, and that's kind of what she lives by. But beyond her search for water and her, you know, trials to stay alive and her trials to look less like a beautiful woman and more like someone who can blend in, because that becomes an issue for her. You know, her beauty becomes an issue where she realizes men have changed. You know, it's almost a hearkening back to the caveman days. But she comes across this bus and it's her way out of town. And she really thinks, I'm going to get out of town on this bus. And she sees women and children being loaded onto this bus, you know, and she says, this is it. This is how I get out of Phoenix and get somewhere that has a water supply so I don't have to go through this rigor. But it turns out this bus is just essentially it's like a slave ship. It's a human trafficking bus that's taking these women, promising these women and children, you know, exile from Phoenix, but really just taking them to the sales block. And that becomes her mission. So that's one area and one piece of what happens in the book. But there's no law, you know what I mean? There are no cops. There's no law, and it really is about, you know, the strongest and the meanest guy getting along, or the most prepared, one or the other.
And Sharon's one of the journals, or is she somebody that's this is what the rebuild looks like afterwards?
Oh, no, this is one of the journals in the Dark Decades. That's what the Dark Decades are built upon, that sort of lawlessness and, you know, that really crazy desire to make it no matter what it takes.
The massive resource scarcity.
That's it, big time. Right, exactly. You know, no one's producing. No one's producing food for you anymore. No one's cleaning the water anymore. It's an eye-opener for sure.
And do we see what it looks like in the rebuild?
No, because Well, it takes a little bit of imagination, because the writing is done post Dark Decades of the case study itself. So there's a preface in the book, and then there's an ending in the book, an afterword in the book, and that's really where it breaks down just sort of what the man Jay Singfire thinks about the journals and what he thinks happened in that time period, and also again asks you to analyze these journals and come up with your own conclusion. One of my favorite things to do, Mark, and I don't know if it's because I've read a lot of poetry growing up, but I feel like books really lose their sort of, you know, it's sort of like a horror movie. The build up to seeing the monster is what the movie's all about. You know what I mean? When you lay the plan.
No, that's true.
Of exactly what the monster is and what the monster looks like and how it acts, then it kind of, you know, when you get to a certain age, it kind of becomes silly. But nothing is better than the build-up to that monster. So you never really get to see the monster in our world, but you can piece it together. You know, you start to get ideas about there are bombs that went off. You know what I mean? In Washington, D.C., something happened. For some strange reason, one of the characters, Curtis O'Leary, he has a son, and he lost his wife and his other son early on in the catastrophe when the law sort of left and men went out of their minds. But so he lost his wife and his son, and he gets settled in an area. And what happens in this area, because of its proximity to the capital, is there's some sort of radiation storms that course through every so often. And the town that he's living in is prepared for it, and they have everything they need. They have nuke alerts, and they know when these things are coming, based on the wind, and it's just a leftover, essentially, of what happened there. So you get little snippets of things like that to tell you, you know, something happened here, something, maybe a nuclear bomb, maybe a dirty bomb, maybe something even bigger, you know, but you never really get the plan laid out. I think it'd be much more fun for the reader to figure out on their own how they want the death to happen.
Sure. And the road, that didn't really get into a lot of detail of how they got to where they were either. And,
no, that's a great point.
And yeah, the Hunger Games, point. I mean, you get this sort of like, a real quick outline of there was a civil war of some sort, but you don't get a lot of detail about how they got to where they are.
That's a great point. I never, I love the road. I never saw the Hunger Games, but that is a good point. Yeah, the road really, they never break. They just talk, it's very similar now that you mention it. You know, you get a lot about setting. You get a lot about, you know, the people. and how the people are acting in that world. But yeah, never so much about exactly, you know, these four bombs went off here, or the EMP happened over this state. None of that kind of stuff.
And you working on any new preparedness projects for yourself?
Personal preparedness projects for, like, the household?
Yeah, anything? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to get, there's always something going on, man. We've got, one of the big things is we're committing to chickens this spring.
Awesome.
So we have the coop built, all that's done.
Very cool.
I made some big things happen this year. You know, we really upgraded, if you don't remember, Mark, one of my biggest selling points with I Am Liberty is to push the idea of community-based preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to sort of get away from that, you know,
lone
one
wolf.
Man. Yes, exactly. And we put some peach trees up at the community garden this year and some fig trees up there. And we expanded again. You know, we have a great big park. We're really lucky, and I understand that. When I talk to audiences and tell them, you got to get your act together. You got to get a community garden. We're really blessed because we have a big, giant park and people who really appreciate what we're doing. But yeah, fruit trees were big this year. I planted some on my own property. And, you know, the fig tree really was basically planted just to go right over top of the chicken coop. So I'll play around with those chickens for a little while and see how good I can get at that process. And then I'll try to integrate it up the street at our community garden and let everyone in the, you know, town really enjoy it.
Yeah, well, this is definitely the time to do the learning curve rather than after the collapse, right?
Oh, God, I can't even imagine. I really can't even imagine it. You know, for anybody who really seriously thinks that there'll be time or you know, I just can't imagine. If things got as bad as they really could, there's going to be no time for that kind of stuff, you know, to fail. There'll be no room for failure, you know. That's my opinion anyway. But like I told you before we got started tonight, I started hunting with the bow. That's a new thing. What I told my audience last year is, I was fully prepared to be terrible for at least 2 years at many things in my life. So I took on a lot of new things this year for sure, but fully with the preparation of failure and expecting failures, you know, small failures and recovery.
That's a huge part of success is making room for failure.
Definitely. Definitely. I recommended it to my audience around the same time. I think it was in February of last year. I started going to a new gym. Really big into combat sports, and I started going to one of the premier gyms in Virginia, and so I knew I was going to get beat up all year. Like I said, I picked up the recurve bow, so I knew I was going to be spending money on arrows that would go flying in the woods out back of my house.
Getting bent.
I was just fully, yeah, right, exactly, fully prepared to be terrible for at least 2 years, and I said, you know what, and when I get through this, I'm going to look back and I'm going to say, man, I've made some serious improvements, and that's what life's all about, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, for our new listeners, can you tell them a little bit more about I Am Liberty and tell them when that comes on and,
most definitely.
And how they can access it?
Yeah. So iamliberty.wordpress.com is the website, and I have archives up there. And one day I'm going to stop being such a cheapo and actually pay for the, for the iamlibertyshow.com website probably. But right now it's iamliberty.wordpress.com. And we have archives up there, like I said. The show is live every Friday night on PrepperBroadcasting.com, 9 Eastern. It's really hard to put a peg into the show. We're on the Prepper Broadcasting Network, so of course we talk about issues in the world that could affect, the world in a big way. But it's definitely not uncommon for me. I grow weary of topics, Mark, really fast. You know, Ebola, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to hear about it. I'm so over the Ebola thing. It's unbelievable. So, a few weeks ago, I do shows on PrepperPodcast.com as well. They're pretty intermittent though, but there's some old good archives there that you can access through my website. But, I did a show called Ebola and Romanticism, and it really was basically intermittent bits of Ebola news, and the majority of the show was me talking about some of my favorite paintings from the 19th century. I mean, that's just me, you know. I mean, that's what the show's about, and I feel like the audience that I've developed thus far comes to the show for that. You know what I mean? They definitely want to get the news from me, but I'm not the penultimate prepper. You know, I only got into this thing 2 years ago, so you don't come to I Am Liberty in hopes to learn about the most in-depth and incredible survival plans. We're going to talk about all the news. We're going to talk about, you know, my opinions on the news and have you on. You can call into the show. But I've always made the claim it's the most selfish podcast on the internet, because really I put it together so I could talk to cool people like Mark Goodwin. You know what I mean? And
I did the same thing.
It's a great avenue. I mean, if I called some of the people, I've had scientists on the show, geologists, really cool people on the show. You know, we don't stay in the prepper vein, but like I said, we can always swerve in and out of that lane, and it's fun. And those guys wouldn't have anything to do with me if I called them up and said, "Hey, it's James Walton, you know, some guy who lives in Virginia and goes fishing a lot. You want to talk for about an hour about some stuff?" You know, you'd get laughed at. You'd probably get the cops called on you, to be honest, but it's a great show. We have a lot of fun. And like I said, if you get beat to death with the topics of the day, it's a little bit of an escape from that, because like I said, I can't take it. It drives me crazy after a while. But that's I Am Liberty. Like I said, live 9 Eastern, on every Friday night at PrepperBroadcasting.com. And, I do the occasional pre-record on PrepperPodcast.com. Two great websites if you want to check them out for knowledge as well.
And I totally hear what you're saying about Ebola. I guess if there's anything that's can be redeeming about all the coverage that it's getting, is that I think it is maybe helping to shake a few people out of that false sense of security that they have, because the mainstream media is not covering the other things that they really should be worried about, like economic collapse, because they don't really understand it. They don't really understand the banking system. I think it was Ford that said, if the people really understood the banking system in America, we'd have a revolution tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
He said, wow. It's a good thing they don't know what's going on.
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because last week I usually read, like I said, big drama kid, nerdy guy. I read a little bit of the Telltale Heart on the show last week, because what it reminded me of, it popped into my head, the Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe, because all the news that started to glorify preppers in the last few weeks, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, all my friends were like half joking about buying gas masks and about stocking up with food. You know, it was this nervous laughter. It was hilarious. You know, almost, you could almost feel them on the tightrope, you know, thinking about, maybe this isn't such a bad idea after all. And it really reminded me of, you know, the prepper movement has been so bashed by Nat Geo and all kinds of different, outlets, news outlets. But when real trouble crops up, you know, when something that could really be serious and you're faced with reality, that telltale heart starts to beat under the floorboards, you know, and you start rethinking. You know, those crazy preppers, you start rethinking that telltale heart starts beating again. And it really reminded me of that when I saw all these articles coming out about, oh, preppers, maybe it's a good idea. Maybe you should price this or that. You know, it was funny to me.
And where can folks find your book? And tell us one more time the title and where to buy it.
So it is Our World Recovered Journals. And it's available on Amazon.com. You can search my name or search Our World, or you can go to my website, iamliberty.wordpress.com. There's a link right there. Twitter is at iamlibertyshow. It's available there also. We've got it linked up everywhere, and a few great websites have it up as well. But yeah, that's where you can get it. It's $3.99 on Kindle, and it's an outrageous $8.99 on Amazon. But I think that's a little much for a paperback myself, but it's really the only way that we can make any money. And I think you can, second that probably, Mark, because you're a self-published man as well, aren't you?
Yeah. There's a limit of what you can do for the paperback on Amazon. And a lot of that has to do because they print it on demand. So, that's one of the ways that people are able to self-publish is that they'll print one book, which I'm sure probably has higher costs associated than running 500 books. But, you know, if you run 500 books, then you also have to have a certain amount of costs to offset any waste. So, I think it's pretty efficient and it's certainly, you know, it's certainly a lot less than what you'd pay for a book in college where, you know, it's slightly larger and it's, $250. So
that's a good point. You know, and I think the for our genre in You know, and because we are so many things, Mark. I mean, we are sci-fi. We are, you know, dystopian. We can even be romance. That we can be philosophical. The prepper genre, especially prepper fiction in particular, is you're guaranteed at least a few adrenaline rushes on every book because it's just that type of reading. And when I laid this book out like the way I laid it out, very different from most books, was really, I wrote an article actually that's on APN right now about the power of self-publishing, about me writing this book and the layout and the way I laid it out and not having to think, I wonder if a publisher will pick this up and get what I'm doing, which is huge, which can take a writer who has phenomenal ideas and cram them in a box. And then you have, you know, a pretty good novel put out every now and again. But with self-publishing, man, you have the ability to write whatever you want.
Absolutely. And it wasn't possible 10 years ago.
No way.
James, thanks so much for taking time to come on the show, and we'll definitely get you back on sometime soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mark. Love Prepper Recon. And I got to get the final installment of your series, because I'm definitely excited to see what the rebuild looks like.
All right.
But I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
See you around.
When a dark plan forged by the world's elite brings disaster to the nation, two unlikely friends must rely upon each other for survival. Will they live long enough to expose the powers that be? Find out in the new novel, The Chaos Agenda, by Seth Evanoff. They have a plan for the future, refuse to follow it. The Chaos Agenda. Available in Kindle and print on Amazon.com.